Yeah, I mean, Enron Field's a good one.
Enron's
okay,
great.
Click on the link again. Just keep Enron in your back pocket because that's a great one. But
Smoothie King Center, yes.
That's like number
cheaper
10. Like,
Insurance Direct Stadium.
Whataburger Field.
Save on goes. Tony Macaroni Arena Bear. Sleep Train. University of Phoenix Stadium. Wait, deadass, that's where the Cardinals play? Is University of Phoenix Stadium? No way. Also, this is my favorite thing.
The Yum
ever.
Brand Center.
No, the KFC Yum Center. It is my everything. I never wanted to play at the KFC Yum Center, but I want to.
Because their parent company's Yum Brands, but like they couldn't call it just the Yum Center. They had to call it the KFC Yum Center. Because it's Louisville.
That's fucking beautiful, dude. I also had no idea that the Cardinals are the University of Phoenix. They don't even have a fucking, like, they don't even have a campus, do they?
I guess they do. I mean, they have, like, offices. You can get office buildings. That's doable.
Okay. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We're an irreverent podcast about music news and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 212 of this fine podcast about morals. This week we have three albums that we're going to review. We have the much anticipated 30 album by Adele. It's finally out. We have Day/Night album by Parcells. And we have Spiral by Rez. So three very different albums, very different genres and stuff, because this is what we do on this fine established podcast.
This is an Audio Face episode, if there ever were any, just because of the wide range of albums that we've got and the spattering of news stories. Yeah, and the news stories. I'm really excited for the new singles, especially. I think we've got a really wide variety of things. And so why am I talking? You're hosting. Let's get started.
Well, let's just get into it. We got Intimidated by Kay Chinata featuring her. And Kay Chinata is really, because of this podcast, thank you very much. I'm starting to really enjoy Kay Chinata's production, his music, everything he does that he touches. It's just every time I hear it, it's like, damn, it's good. And this single is, you know, keeps that record up high. Very good single with her. I love her vocals on there, naturally. Overall, really good track. I mean, there was three tracks on there, I believe. There was another one with Thundercat, one other track. But obviously, we're talking about Intimidated for the little three-song drop. I assume he's going to be having an album out soon?
Sooner rather than later. Bubba didn't necessarily catch us by surprise, but it was in that awkward period in December when it's hard for us to review new albums. But like this time of year, a lot of really great albums are coming out, just to allude to what we're going to be talking about later in this podcast.
Yep.
But it's a really soft track. It's not going to be anything too overwhelming.
No.
And so that is definitely really great to have. And I am really liking these really nice little drops from artists, getting a little sense of where their sound might be to come. I would love if Kay Chinata did this like more muted kind of idea thing throughout more of his music later on. I only listened to the first single, for her song Intimidated off the EP. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I'll be interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, agreed. Second single, we have Meant to Be by Norman Lake. It's along with the music video. It's actually a really fun track. I like it. It reminds me, I cannot think of the artist's name, but there's an Alaskan indie artist where the vocals remind me of it a lot. I'll think of it randomly in the podcast. It'll hit me. But anyways.
Yeah, maybe think about it while I talk about it myself and give you some like time to Google it yourself.
Yeah,
or the fun way we do this thing, hosting the podcast. No, but in keeping with trying to do a mix of artists you've heard about, artists that are kind of up and rising, artists that you recommend at audioface@syndicate23.co that you send in. Norman Lake is an up and coming artist in the LA area. He usually does music with like a folk kind of spin, but he always keeps things very, very high production. As you see, there's a whole like string section in there with cello stuff. There's really, mm-hmm. really nice production as all kind of comes together.
The feeling that I don't want me, so nobody else can. It's the lie within me. It's the contradiction.
The fun that Sean was kind of alluding to is Norman Lake dressed as a mummy, essentially, in the video.
Time.
That's in this really interesting sort of like desert setting. It's really well done, really well directed. I think the entire team,
fantastic.
Both visually,
Actually,
the entire team, both.
Well.
Yeah, I am being a little bit coy about it. I'll have more to reveal about that in the coming weeks or so, in addition to my like other teas I was talking about. But yeah, it's an absolutely great track. And seriously, I think Norman Lake killed it with this one.
I agreed. And also Ralph Castelli is the other indie artist I was thinking of, for his vocals sound very similar, but I like it a lot because I like Ralph Castelli a lot. I actually need to talk about him more on the podcast too.
I think that's a really good comparison and a great compliment. I like the vocals in this. I like, the instrumentation, the way it all comes together, just really well executed. Definitely check out more of Norman Lake. You can follow him on Instagram at Norman Lake Music, by the way.
And next single, we have Me, Me, Me by 100 Gex. I had to give this one to Dan because, you know, he's a big 100 Gex fan and he didn't even want to do the single, but I'm the one who put the single in. So don't say I don't work hard for this damn podcast. I actually really like the track. It's extremely Gex. It's extremely 100 Gex. Fast paced, crazy, weird. And the music video makes me extremely uncomfortable.
A joke when I'm talking to you. I take it back quick and I not like true. Cause you say so many things and I don't know.
Yeah, so first of all, just to clear the air, it's not that I didn't want to have it on the singles list. I just didn't put it on and you're just really putting me on blast here. I'm just selecting things and
no, it's not on blast.
It's glad that it's on there.
I'm saying I'm a good friend, damn it.
Okay, yes. Definitely. I'll agree with that. Thank you for indulging me, 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 I guess. The music video is definitely very wild. They're carrying on the torch from Death Grips and making wild music videos. It's like shot from the mouth in certain points. And in addition to that, it's one of those lenses that's almost like fisheye. So it's very disorienting. I encourage you not to eat or drink anything or even like move while you're watching this video. If you choose to watch the video, God bless. But it is a really, it also kind of, rather than a lot of 100 Gex, of course, 100 Gex tracks are really chaotic. This one keeps to a really kind of standard, like 4/4 punk rock kind of signature. So it could be approachable in that way. But I think they are coming with an album soon. And I'll definitely be looking forward to that.
I like it. Last single, we have 2010 by Earl Sweatshirt. First real single since Some Rap Songs, I believe, if I am correct. And it's, you know, continuing on the tradition of Some Rap Songs of being shorter songs. It's a short track, about 2.5 minutes long, but it's fantastic.
Redirect the fight where it's meant for. Triumph over plight and immense loss. Right alone at night, I get clear thoughts. Caught a couple slices and I veered off. Saw another height, had my ears popped. Walked outside, it was still gorgeous. Sharp insides was revealed slowly. In the dark inside, we was real hungry. On the 7 of the 5, we was real hungry. Niggas still drumming. Foot shook ground when I stepped on it. Didn't look back when I broke soil. Cause every time I did it,
I really, really like this track. Production, vocals, everything on here. It's just, I was honest, very, very impressed with Earl Sweatshirt. The track.
Yeah, Earl Sweatshirt just continues on this. It's experimental. It's got a little bit of edge to it. It is Earl Sweatshirt continuing to do what he does best. If anything, the thing he misses on is just more of like a consistent release timeline. Like, I think he could have more hype around himself, but maybe he's very content with not having that.
It's fine. Yeah. He takes his time with everything, which I love, because if you're going to release this, you know, this like really good music in between and whatnot, then take your time with it. Let it marinate. Let your ideas really get drawn out instead of just album after album. But I love it because it's the keyboards actually remind me of MGMT-ish keyboards in the middle of like that's kind of popping out throughout the track. The beat sounds like early 2010s beat, which is funny because obviously the track is called 2010. But it's very good overall. I'm excited for his new record, whenever that releases.
Yeah, it will happen at some weird point, and for all we know, the album cover will freak Sean out again, like some rap songs did. But we'll definitely review it when it comes out. And a lot of these tracks we've added to our 2021 AF playlist, which you can check out at the link in the description of this video underneath the like button, which you should also press, underneath the subscribe button, which you should also press. Or if you're listening to the podcast, you can see that link as well in the description of the podcast. We're adding stuff to that playlist every single week, but there are a few weeks in the year, so we're almost done with that playlist. That'll be on to 2022 and greener pastures, I guess. But definitely check out that playlist. It is fun and we like making that, and also it'll help us with the Core Packing Awards very much as well. Check out the bonus episodes. You already know about that. Check out Audioface Pod on Twitter and Instagram at Audioface Pod. And yeah, just rate it on, you know, do all the things we usually say that drive engagement and help us grow the podcast. Most recent episode of Power Report, a lot of people are talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict because it was one of the more predictable things ever. Bam, Caesar, and I talked about that on the last episode of Power Report. So you can check that out. The commentary on it is spot on. And so we definitely want to, you know, make sure you're informed, appreciate providing that service for y'all. And so check that out at powerreport.world or search Power Report anywhere you get your podcasts. And thank you, Peter, for mastering the episode of Power Report and the episodes of Audio Face, so they sound great and cool. Really appreciate that service. And he does it on behalf of Dead Music Productions. They also do music mastering and production for artists. So if that's up your alley as well, you can hit them up. You can find them at deadmusic666 on Insta. And when they have other ways to reach out to them as well, you can definitely check them out there. But yeah, what a great singles block. Let's get into the news, which is not so great.
Yeah, so top news story of the week. Yon Dolph was tragically murdered in Memphis this past week. He was shot and killed inside a cookie shop by his house, or on his way back to his house, which is absolutely crazy. He was at Makita's Homemade Butter Cookies, a place where he normally goes and stuff for Thanksgiving traditions, and he was shot and killed over there. Horrible. I don't know if he was targeted or anything. I don't think any of those details have come out yet, per se, but yeah.
Yeah, it unfortunately, I mean, certainly appears so. There's been a couple of photos and video evidence that's been released from the scene of the crime, and you see these two guys with semi-automatic rifles who, like, seem to be targeted, kind of know what they're doing. I mean, Yon Dolph is, as we're kind of going to talk about in his legacy, really well known in his community. And yes. So it's hard to kind of see that this was a random incident. At very least, like, you know, like, there aren't many people around this area of Memphis who are driving this kind of car. Like, people just kind of understand it to this extent. He has that presence in his community. But yeah, the whole thing was just really tragic. And kind of skipping ahead, there's a memorial that's taking place at the cookie place, but there was someone who was shot even at that memorial just a day after, like, the original shooting of Yon Dolph. And so all the officials in Memphis are urging people to, you know, stay in their homes for the time being. This video is kind of going up late, so maybe that part of the information is a little bit older now. But they're just urging people to kind of stay calm, remain peaceful, and fighting against violence. Obviously, there's going to be an increased police presence around these areas to keep people safe as people mourn. But I mean, targeting mourners is ridiculous.
Let's see, this the lowest of the low. If anybody does that, Jesus. Sad, like, to hear that one.
Even on like gang level stuff, you usually don't like target just random morning stuff. So it, of course, like, you talk, like, rappers unfortunate part of rap history is like rappers dying untimely deaths. And, you know, we talk about the overdosing aspect of that, but like the shootings and the murders, that's just sort of like a lot of times outside of their control. So it feels particularly more tragic when it happens. And so it's worth talking kind of about the legacy that he left behind. He's really known for being, you know, people described him as really down to earth, someone who did a lot for his community and gave back. Someone who, like people who are, there's a quote from a Variety article I'm reading that says the executive director of Memphis Artists for Change, Tamika Greer, confirmed that Young Dolph was also expected to show up at a holiday event in December for children of incarcerated parents.
Man.
His generosity knew no bounds, she said in a statement. Young Dolph didn't deserve to die, and neither do the children, youth, and adults who lose their lives to gun violence every day. And that's a really good statement acknowledging, yeah, everything that's kind of going on there.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of rappers and artists kind of put out their support as well, acknowledging the not just like the rapping that he's doing, just the community giving back to the community aspect he's doing as well. Yeah. I think it's just a good example to put out there. And so like, it's unfortunate that that is all Young Dolph leaves, but it's really sad. Heart goes out to family and loved ones. Yeah. What a country.
The more details and stuff we get about that or whatever, we will let you know. Moving on to first album review of the day, we have 30 by Adele. It is 12 songs, 58 minutes long. Her first album since 25, which came out 6 years ago in 2015, which is crazy. I remember when that album was released. Doesn't feel like 6 years ago, but shit, time flies. We did hear Easy On Me as the lead single, which is the second song on here. We both were waiting to hear kind of the context of the whole album at release. And now I can kind of get a sense of what she wanted to do with the whole thing. First track, Strangers by Nature. It's that sound of like similar to Easy On Me, where it's a slower kind of opening track with good strings, a little bit of piano in the background and stuff, kind of sets you up for that. Obviously, Easy On Me, second track, really good for the lead single. I think it's gets you a good idea of what the album was going to sound like, but there's a lot more kind of surprises throughout it. It's not just, you know, old Adele per se. There's some more experimentation, some more branching out, some pop and stuff towards the middle and the end of the record, but we'll get to that in a little.
Yeah. Emphasis on record. We're going to be hitting this theme throughout a lot. This is an album. It is intended to be an album. Adele has made herself very clear that she wants this to be consumed as a full album and a project. And there are individual songs on here that knock it out of the park, that are incredible, that I think are just confirmation that Adele is one of the greatest artists of our time, like musically, pop-wise speaking, just like the way she cares to the craft. But we'll go into that very shortly. I have pretty much nothing but positive things to say about this album and the stances she's taking on this being an album.
Yes. Third song, My Little Love. I really like this track. It's a little bit longer, but I love how it builds and builds and builds. And then you even have like this towards the end, like a little spoken part and stuff of her, when it's playing out the last like minute to 90 seconds of the track. Really like that. Then you get like a little bit more pumped up with Cry Your Heart Out, a little bit more upbeat, which is perfect for the way that it plays out in the album.
Facing the day,
first three songs are slower, really diving into your feelings, and then Cry Your Heart Out. It's more of like kind of taking it on your shoulder in a way, because this is definitely like her divorce album. Like you can tell, like that's what it's about. There's lots of different motifs about love, being a relationship problem, so on and so forth. But I like the way that everything is placed in here, because you're not left wanting more and you're not left to be less. Like the perfect sweet spot for everything. And more on that in a bit, obviously, but the way she wants you to hear it, it makes sense. And that's something I really like with When you get albums or concept albums or anything, somebody purposely has everything written down in a specific way. That's art. It's an art form to do that. So it's not easy to do.
It really is not easy to do. Cry Your Heart Out. I love how it still fits within the motif of the album. If it's a little bit muted and soft and lower key in that regard, but still very upbeat. The drums have that favorite thing I've been talking about. Maybe just I've been missing very much of just jazz club night, where you have drums that are definitely there and upbeat, but they're not particularly loud or like banging. They're just like really keeping the pace. The piano, you really feel the passion and the energy and the lyrics, of course, like Adele, it's nothing to say here. Adele's usually like coming in correct with all the lyrics and the meaning is. But the fact that you feel that passion through the instrumentation is something that we mentioned that comes out in certain records that or certain songs even, that when all those things come together, like that's music. That's what some of the best music can be, when you're understanding all of those things, working in motion, conveying that emotion.
Yes. Yep. 100%. So in the middle, you have some good tracks too. You have "Oh My God," "Can I Get It?" Again, more of like that kind of upbeat, different. Like "Can I Get It?" It's like that nice acoustic pop song in a way. You know what Ed Sheeran?
Really
so
90s.
Like,
let me just come and get it.
Like what Ed Sheeran would sound like if he didn't sell out and suck now. this is how a British singer-songwriter does it nowadays. This is
the hot takes never end on Audio Face.
God, no, never. That's the whole point of them. And I want to what points? Damn it! I want to set a point. Fantastic track too. "I Drink Wine," I think, is a really good middle track song where you have some other stuff right before it, and you have some decent stuff after it, but it's a really good, almost a ballad stuff. Building and building, it's a little bit slower, it's a longer of a piece, but it's well done too.
Yeah, I was impressed with how the middle of the album sort of just lands really nicely, and it's really difficult to accomplish. We review so many albums where once you get to the bottom, middle, like if we divide albums into halves, the first half and the second half is usually the hardest to continue to achieve and execute properly, because to keep up the energy you get, to keep up the attention you've gotten, the good graces you've gotten from the listener in the first half of the album is very difficult to do. And to also maintain the sound of the album, to make sure that what you're trying to accomplish, like a lot is really writing on the end of that album. And so a lot of artists just sort of do throwaway tracks. A lot of artists just sort of give their best effort at it and will applaud that effort, but because they're trying to do so many things, they fall short. A lot of artists honestly just frankly aren't up to the challenge, yet nevertheless, they're making the music. But here you get a set of tracks that go through really nicely. If anything, each individual track, especially the last three, "Hold On," "To Be Loved," or "Love Is a Game," could almost stand on its own as the album ender. But it keeps going on in a way that, you know, it's on the longer side. The songs are on the longer side. The album is on the longer side for 2021. However, it doesn't drag on.
So good. Like, "Love Is a Game" is one of my favorite album enders I've had in a long time for a record. And I am falling. What a cruel thing to self-inflict that pain. Love is a game for fools to play. And I am falling again. What a cruel thing to self-inflict that pain. Because you have that middle part with "I Drink Wine." Then after that, you have "All Night Parking," "Woman Like Me." Those are a little bit like, I almost got worried at those points because I'm like, okay, I see we still have these three launch songs left. I'm like, is it going to drag on? Like, I'm really enjoying this record. Don't, like, I hope it doesn't do that. And it doesn't at all. This Hold On is slow, but it builds and builds and builds. And then the last minute is absolutely gorgeous. To Be Loved kind of sits that in between those two, because I think Hold On and Love Is a Game are very powerful, and you can't have them back to back because you'd water it down. Having To Be Loved in between the two of them is great because it gets you that kind of a little bit of release to be between them. And then Love Is a Game just lands it perfectly for it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful track. I think one of the best Adele songs in a while.
Yeah, and it's not to say Adele's been putting out bad songs.
No, like, but I'm just saying it's like she even upped a notch, because that last track, I've listened to it like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, this is fantastic. It's really good. And same thing for me, because normally I don't like, I'll enjoy these tracks and whatnot, right? I'll enjoy it. I'll listen to them here or there, but I won't like, because especially with audio face, because we don't have time to sit and listen to a lot. I wasn't thinking that I would put on one specific song of Adele's and be like, just listen to that shit on repeat. And I put that one on VP because it's so.
Yeah. It's another thing is that it's interesting for an artist to be able to transport you into experiences that you're not necessarily relatable to. Like, yeah. I have not been in a marriage therefore I cannot be in a divorce. But like the heartbreak, the pain and sadness, always, knock on wood.
You can always relate to at least little bits of human motifs because you can always put your own mind to it. It doesn't necessarily need to be exact the same, but it could be anything, you know? It could just be a jubilation. It can be heartbreak, it can be sadness, it can be loss. There's so many different emotions. That's the love with Love as a Game. Like, you can make it happy, you can make it snap. Kind of do like old 60s chew up.
Yeah.
Do 50s, 60s, you can kind of do what you want with the same thing too. So, yeah, fantastic record. Really, really impressed with it. It fucking.
And we'll go one back to one last thing on that being a record. So Adele insisted with Spotify, I'm not sure at least at the time of recording this with how it worked with other streaming services, but Spotify, I don't think this has been the case forever, but at least for the past couple years, for very recently, the default option, the like big green button you see when you're about to play an album is a shuffle icon. So you'll like shuffle through the album. And you know, this is kind of like a small little user interface change, but in reality, these little user interface changes matter substantially in the grand scheme of how people interact with the app, because we, and I mean Sean and myself and Adele and all the people making music with Adele and all of you people listening to this podcast are really, really big into music. And so we will notice these things, but the average person will just see the big green button that's inviting and they will just go to it. And so Adele insisted with this music release, essentially, that Spotify change the default play button on albums so that if you press that button, it plays through the album front to back.
How it fucking should be. I am really glad that it's there, because it's something that always annoyed me with Spotify's interface of you'd pop up an album, it would be shuffle and play. And I'm like, why don't you just click play? And then if you want to shuffle it, you could go to your song and click shuffle if you really wanted to do that, because it's supposed to meant to be played out, or that's how albums should be made. And most are done that way. Thank you, Adele. Nominated Work Award.
Yeah. Thank you, Adele, for
definitely.
Yeah. For you. Yeah, for using your power in the music industry as one of the biggest, most well-respected artists currently doing it right now to get a platform, which is, you know, through its haphazard behavior, shaping user behavior through its musical streaming service. It's the interface through which people are interacting with music now. Thank you for like using your power to do this good thing for the art. This isn't like even the political thing we shout on Audioface very often. This is just like a Anderson .Paak tattooing that thing about posthumous records. Like, this is a good artist standing on their principles in a way that makes me wonder how many people are listening to Audioface, and like what kinds of people are listening to Audioface. Like, what kind of rooms you're working in? What are your day jobs? Please email us and let us know. I want to have interviews with you because you seem to be getting in the right people's ears, and we appreciate it.
Right. Exactly. arbitrary scale this week, because we always do arbitrary scales for album reviews, because normal ranking systems are null and void in our opinions, because they don't do anything but make things worse. So it doesn't matter, our reviews, our review, but it's fun to talk about the worst stadium names in stadiumdom, because that's what we like to do for arbitrary scale. There's a lot of bad stadium names, just for you guys to know. Like, Jesus, there's a lot of bad stadium names.
Yeah, I think just for slight clarity for the listeners, worse is better.
Worse is
better. In this case?
Worse is better. And you could take that with however you want.
This is going to be the Save-On Foods Memorial Center for me.
Jesus Christ, that's such a bad name. This is, I mean, this is going to be the cheaper insurance direct stadium.
That's
hey, I got tickets to the cheaper insurance direct stadium, boys. Let's go.
Also, our arbitrary scales are vaguely news-based, and we will never be calling it the Crypto.com Arena. That's the Staples Center forever.
That is Staples Center for the rest of life. It's like if someone somehow changes the Honda Center, that's the Honda Center forever. Staples Center, Honda Center for the rest of my life. I don't give a shit what people say.
I would agree with that. I have a much less of an engagement or like a relationship to the Honda Center, but like the Staples, that's Los Angeles legend. And yeah, that's Los Angeles legend. And some like crypto boys are not going to like clout buy it.
I can't wait for crypto.com to like just cease to exist and it goes back to the Staples Center.
It's a 20-year contract. It's going to sound very weird 15 years from now. I guarantee that.
100%. I didn't know it was a 20-year contract. That's just not going to be around for 20 years. There's no way. Like crypto.com at least.
Hashtag no economics.
Yes. Speaking of hashtag no economics, Tidal, they launched a free membership tier because why? Jesus Christ, Tidal is terrible. But anyway, so they launched a free membership tier, and they also have, they changed up their royalties for artists. And so I remember, so Tidal launched in what, 2014, I like to say. And it was you could only have like a premium membership in order to use it, which is crazy. So now they put it down to where they have a Tidal free, which is only in the US, by the way, no other countries. So damn, okay, Jay-Z. We have Tidal Hi-Fi, which is $10 a month, the Tidal Hi-Fi Plus, because everything is a plus here, for $19.99 a month.
But before we dig too much into the like details, I'll like jump in a little bit. So like yeah, US only is probably just like a streaming rights thing. Just to like get all these rights in all the countries. To be able to get in one country is probably hard enough. And so to do it in a major market is probably how they're starting it. Maybe they'll roll it out, but you know, Tidal. the free tier is interesting. Yeah, it says right now they're not going to have ads in it. So for now, it means they'll do it soon, of course. But it'll prompt people to upgrade to a paid tier. And Tidal free users won't have lyrics like won't have access to lyrics, offline downloads, higher audio quality, those kind of things. Tidal Hi-Fi seems to be sort of like the standard one, you know. I think it's interesting with Tidal Hi-Fi Plus though.
Yeah, I mean, Tidal is just, they've always done everything wrong, in my opinion. Like every step they've done to try and entice people to use their service or entice artists to do exclusive albums on there have always ended up in the wrong. They've always failed in a way. Like it's never gone the way they wanted it to go.
The thing with the Hi-Fi Plus tier is that they're going to do the thing we talked about.
Yeah,
with the basically the way music streaming goes right now is that if you pay, let's say, $10 a month for a music streaming service, and let's pretend that some amount of that goes to artists, and like amount of that does go to artists, but it's not going to be all that $10 of that dollars. A lot of that just goes straight to Spotify, and a lot of that goes to other people ancillary to the music industry. But even if you don't listen to, let's say, the top streamed artist, most of your subscription money goes to the top streamed artist.
Naturally.
Whereas in this new Tidal Hi-Fi Plus subscription, it's made so the artist payouts are based on how much you listen to that artist. So if you're a fan of a really big artist and you are listening to an artist all the time, then a higher proportion of your $20 a month will go to that artist. So it's kind of like putting the ball in people's court of like, okay, do you really want to support yes. your artists through your streams as much as possible? Then here is a plan that will do that. We'll test out and see if other, you know, music services, the bigger ones, to be honest, see that as a viable revenue. Yeah, to see if they use, see that as a viable business plan going forward.
Yep. And this is the I was going to say, because normally everything that Tidal does is bad. I think this is the one thing that Tidal has gotten right, because we've talked about this before with different streaming services, how we would like to be able to divvy up our money to artists that we want to give it to in a way. It's very difficult to do, but I like the way that I like at least it's a start, step in the right direction for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll be good. This Tidal doesn't really give out their metrics, and like mm-hmm. it's hard to blame them because, again, they're not one of the top streaming services and they had a lot of high promises to that. But I hope that they will be at least a little bit forthcoming with how well this service yes. is going.
I really want to see the numbers in this and see how many people releasing this, how many people are actually getting that, like upgrading tier memberships, and how many are giving it divvied up to different artists, or which artists are going to get all of that stuff too. It'd be interesting to see those numbers as well. If those numbers, like if it changes from artists or whatnot. So it'd be interesting to see.
Definitely.
Moving on, next story. So apparently the film Bohemian Rhapsody somehow lost money. They're down, apparently they're in the red of about $51 million. Even though I think they got 900 million global box office for their entire haul, which is absurd, but somehow they're in the red 51 million, according to 20th Century Fox. So,
yeah.
I don't know how.
it's very interesting because one of the
they're in 50 million in the red, because their film didn't cost $1 billion to make. I think it said this movie down here. So the article, it says that the budget was around 50 million. And apparently, it grossed $911 million. So I don't understand how the hell they're $51 million in the hole for that film.
Yeah, the article we're reading points out one reference where in Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson filed a lawsuit alleging that he was underpaid millions of dollars because the company like behind the studio behind the film alleged that the trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, wasn't profitable. And so there's a lot of different like accounting tricks that Hollywood's kind of known for to be able to like spin a hugely marketed, like really popular, like kind of thing that's going on into a sorry, we didn't make money for it, so we can't give you your money kind of deal. It's really, again, like I said, interesting how that works sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah. Man, Hollywood economics is weird and fraud is everywhere and people want to get paid, to say the least. But the film was whatever to us. It was okay. There was a lot of historical inaccuracies that pissed me off, but I cannot think of his name, but the lead actor's performance was fantastic. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Right, moving on. Second album review. We have Day and Night by Parcells. It's, well, Spotify has the 3-disc version of it, so it's 23 songs, an hour and 36 minutes long, but it's not 23 songs long. It is, what would that be? It'd be 20 songs long, because it's a two.
Yeah.
It's a,
like 19 songs long. Yeah.
19 songs
long. If you count the 2 discs, yeah. And the third disc on Spotify is more or less the single versions.
Yeah. So say roughly an hour and 20 minutes. Let's go with that.
So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Double albums, not my favorite thing, because it can really feel long, and this thing felt long as shit. as Matthew Healy says, double albums are bad, and we're going to stick you to that, Matt.
Yeah. Noted do as I say, not as I do, double album offender, Matty Healy said double albums are bad for fans. But I Parcels, again, very interesting. Parcels has sort of like the golden blessing from Daft Punk, so to speak. Daft Punk's final collaboration was with Parcels for their song Overnight, I want to say, from a couple years back. And I'm not 100% sure, I guess I can investigate this while we're recording, if Thomas Backlund or anyone else, like...
They produced it. Like, if I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
Yeah, because that, you know, sort of like... neo soul, new spin on disco and funk and all these other different things is very, very apparent there. It was something you definitely saw in Overnight when you saw that direct like Daft Punk torch touch, so to speak.
Yes.
And we talked about Daft Punk in our Daft Punk bonus episode. Check that out in the archives. But you can definitely you definitely hear that in this album. And I think more or less for the better, because I think it's a long album, but you get a lot of pretty like phenomenal tracks in here.
100%. It took a while for me to warm up to this, because the first, I would say the first three tracks in here, the placement of them and the way that they're drawn out starts you off on the wrong foot to me. It starts off with Light, which is a really long opening track, but you get that like funk indie neo soul style throughout it. But it's a largely just an instrumental piece. And to me, like, it's interesting to put that as your opening track for it, but I guess it's okay. But you could also make the elevator music a minute long instead of 6 minutes, 13 seconds of elevator music for me to get into this damn album, because I got more important things to do. But that's me as a music reviewer. Second song, it's the called Free. That kind of sets you up for the record. Again, it's a longer track, but I didn't feel too long with it. Really like the end of it, the way everything comes together, the drums, the bass, the strings in the background, everything. Track. Third one, Coming Back, is one that really, like, for me felt.
Sorry, what was that? You're sort of breaking up a bit. How did it feel?
Oh, I said it just felt really long and I couldn't get into Coming Back, even with the crescendo in the middle of the track. But the ending just took a long time to get to the worst thing. And the worst thing to me is where I got into it. I really like this track. Really cool blend between, you know, more of that funk, neopop, along with indie, kind of wrapped them all together into one track. Really like this. And this is where I got into it. Love the bass, love the groovy bass, kind of a slow down, like a chiller vibe through it. And this is what got me into it. But it took a couple songs.
Yeah, I think that could be a worthy critique that, like, it. In a year, 2021 especially, where the best albums, the ones we've liked the most, are really good at just quickly getting to your point, like quickly getting to the good stuff that you want to sell in that record, so to speak. Not even like a purely economic sense, but like, hey, this is kind of what Sean's saying. This is an attention economy kind of game. The music industry has changed. What can you do in the shortest amount of time to get and hold people's attention with your best stuff? And that means not holding your best stuff till like deep into the album, so to speak. I say so to speak since this is like a double record, but I do think there is good stuff in here. And the worst thing I would agree is like one of those like places where you get the best of all of what they're trying to do in one song and it kind of doesn't get in its own way. That track's only like 3 minutes long.
Example, but yeah, because then after the rest thing, you have In the City, which is the interlude, you have Now I Care Some More, kind of like filler tracks to me, and then you get Something Greater. Greater is a fantastic track. really like it. And to me, this is where I wonder if Thomas had some producer credit to it, because it sounds a lot like early 2010 style Daft Punk, with the way the funk is there. It's blending that funk, indie, Lana Neo soul. It's just a fantastic track. I really like that. But I had to wait, 20, 25, some odd minutes or so, 30 minutes almost to that, to get to there. I wish that could have been the third song maybe or something, because then it really sucks you into the album and makes you appreciate the other songs more in a way. Again, and that's like, going back to our Adele review, Adele had her album laid out perfectly along, so that way every single track is appreciated. You don't want something less, you don't want something more. Those songs were long as hell too. They were 6.5 minutes for a lot of them, but everything is placed perfectly so it doesn't feel like it's 6.5 minutes. You have that leeway to do as an artist and as a group, as a band, to figure out how to make a record sound, obviously as a concept that you like, but also to do make the point get across a little bit quicker. And not just necessarily that, but not to drown your sound too much. That way you're not missing a lot of these subtle things that you get in other tracks that you might want to, you're like experimenting with months and months in. You're like, I hope somebody gets this. You don't want to hope for it. You want to make sure they're going to understand that, oh, they're going to hear this part, because it's pretty clear in it. It doesn't obviously need to be over the nose trap snare or anything, but it could be that little thing where it connects to a track. It connects to something, or connects to a track two tracks down or something like that. But that's my critiques of it, especially the first disc for sure.
Yeah, I think the second, it's weird. I feel like the disc two is sort of where the sound gets a little bit more of its groove. Although I think disc one has more groove. It's weird.
Well, we get the disc two, Shadow is a slower piece kind of to get you into it. Never Loved, I think, is a really good, like, slow little funk track and stuff, almost like 70s style of the way it's really slowed down of it. But then you get Famous, which is like pure love. Fun, it gets on your feet. When you listen to it, you just want to move. But it's also, it doesn't sound too retro in the way it sounds. It still sounds modern. It sounds new, fresh in that regard, but paying homage to different sounds and stuff. Decades, but still fresh enough to jam and eat.
Yeah, Famous is definitely decent. I also appreciated, like, Never Loved is a good song for the album. But yeah, it is sort of like, I don't want to use the phrase like one-dimensional, but like it just is sort of like flat in that way of, it is just that sort of like slow beat, so to speak. Famous, yeah, it has that more upbeat nature. And I don't want to like have my like sort of upbeat bias in tracks that sometimes I have with albums. But I think there's something to be said with Parcels, I think, can work best when they own in on those sort of like really big upbeat kind of grooves, like Something Greater, like Famous, when they, yeah, I think like what you're saying, they try to get those working perfectly, like they do generally well. And then the other stuff they're experimenting with in the tracks, like maybe be a little bit more thoughtful with how those motifs layer out in the record, as opposed to trying to stuff it all into one song multiple times over.
Yeah, it was multiple times over. Exactly. I think it ends fine. It's still a little slow towards the end of it. And again, like, just the way all the placement is of the record is, you can do it better and then have more concise points and stuff if you like. But I'm still not a fan of double albums because they are very long. Your good stuff gets drowned out a lot of the times. Only time I think double albums are okay is if it's like a deluxe version of something, or a purpose-built one like Fools, where it's a part one, part two album where they're released in different stages. That's okay with me as well. But a full double album like this, there's so much in here. You need to be a really big fan of the artist, the group, the band, whatever, to enjoy it. But as someone's a casual listener and whatnot, you're going to, all those motifs, all the stuff you worked very hard on making and producing, recording, all of that is going to go over the head of a lot of people. And I think more artists need to take aware to that, especially in, you know, the times we are in now of music where people tend to like shorter records. We like shorter records depending on it. Sometimes longer records are fine. Adele's longer record is fantastic.
If you justify your time and it feels thoughtful, then like a longer record, God bless. But yeah,
exactly. So, but anyways, our review is our review. Arbitrary scale, because that's what we're known for doing this week, is bad arena names, bad stadium names, because there are hilarious names for stadiums all over the country and world. This is shit. This is the Enron Stadium, baby. This is Fraud Stadium headquarters, my guy. This is, oh, beautiful.
I'm giving this the Tony Macaroni Arena.
Tony Macaroni Arena is fantastic, man. That's good.
It's a good one. It, like, the arena looks like a prison, but I mean, it says Tony Macaroni on it, so it adds a little bit of whimsy.
Yeah.
No, Sean, go ahead, lead then.
Shout out for Gene and Ponch for telling me this story. I wouldn't have come across it without them telling me this. This is hilarious.
I was straight gonna just like, this story happened, let's just move past it. But all right. But
anyways, so Brass Against is a group. They played at a NASCAR event, and a senior straight up just pissed on a dude. The fan literally went up. Said pee on my face because some dudes are into that, and she did. And apparently she apologized for it and says, I'm not a shock artist, but girl, you just Marilyn Manson somebody on stage, so I don't know what you want.
Yeah.
It was at the Rockwell Metal Festival in Daytona, by the way, the Daytona Motor Speedway, where shit happens. Sophia Uris, by the way, worst last name to have when you pee on a dude, Sophia Urista. Oh man,
sounds really close to urethra and urine. But apparently she mentioned having to pee several times during a set, and then secured a volunteer to be her toilet, reading from the Stereo Gum article. Well written, by the way. Quote, get my man with the can on his head ready, because we're gonna bring him on stage and I'm gonna piss in this motherfucker's mouth, end quote. I got to pee and I can't make it to the I got to pee and I can't make it to the bathroom, so we might as well make a show out of it. Yeah, the willing participant in the audience was an old biker looking dude. He had a beer can stuck to his forehead, and so he let her rip. Let her rip, I guess. She apologized for it, saying, I'm not a shock artist, I want to put the music first. But that was kind of a shock artist move, and there's it's a little bit, it's Marilyn Manson, like, in the sense that Marilyn Manson would say, like, hey, there's fluids that sometimes get on people. Like, I think there was a photographer or something who was upset that there were, like, different fluids that got onto the photographer. And Marilyn Manson's response was like, hey, those are just my shows. Sorry, that's just how it be. There's a question to... This goes back to the great trial of R. Kelly episode of The Boondocks, where R. Kelly is arguing to Tom, and then the crux of the argument is, goes, I see P flying, I move. She saw P coming and she stayed. Like, it's ultimately like, what is that choice you make in that regard of as a fan's? Like, yeah, there's that aspect of it, but you are an artist. You're on a stage. You have a position of power. You can totally just, like, stop the show, have the band, like, screw around for a little bit and then, like, pee or something and then come back and then continue it. These are totally, that's one of the most human things to do, honestly.
Seriously, just go, hey, like, I gotta go. Like, people understand, you know, but just gotta unload.
Daytona International Speedway doesn't condone the inappropriate actions that took place during the Thursday's Welcome to Rockville event.
Daytona, you are full of piss, literally, because you have no idea, like, what goes on at Daytona's Motor Speedway stays at Daytona Motor Speedway.
I literally love that NASCAR found the pissing on stage event to go, wait a minute, we have class here at NASCAR.
You might want to rethink that again.
And again, like, no offense to NASCAR fans. I don't want that to get misinterpreted, but like, no.
It's wild as around to. We're not saying anything bad against it, but like, there's worse things that happen there.
It's like, I have nothing against insane clown posse fans, but you know. God. Moving on.
Oh, that's a fucking minefield.
Moving on. It appears that charges that Polo G assaulted a police officer have been dropped. The rapper was arrested in Miami over the summer, and we may have even talked about the story, facing two felony charges of assaulting a police officer. But these charges have been dropped by the police department due to insufficient evidence. And here's the thing, like, hopefully Americans, since the whole George Floyd thing, hashtag no politics, have gotten used to the narrative that the media crafts around these things. Yeah. When it is a person, specifically a male person of color, who does even like the slightest thing, they pick about like every possible angle in which to describe how they were wrong. Like, Trayvon Martin smoked weed once, so that's why he deserved to die. Like all those different random things. But you also notice that there was an officer involved shooting, or, you know, there's an officer involved pedestrian incident in which a vehicle collided with a person. It's like they abstract it so much when the cops are actually at fault. But yeah, it seemed that Polo G was arrested and booked, and the Guilford Knight Convention Center was charged with battering a police officer and threatening a public servant. I do remember talking about this. Polo G's mom was talking about, Polo G's mom was talking about her kids calling her, going like, yo, the cops are following us, like 20 police cars, like following us, harassing us. So it definitely seems to be one of those cases where maybe they just like dropped what was like, they just didn't have enough evidence to work with.
Yeah. I'm going to let you read this one.
All right. So rapper Yella Beezy, according to TMZ, is being charged with allegedly raping a woman on the first date. He's also been charged with Audioface's mugshot award nomination because Lordy.
What a mugshot, man.
Yeah. The details are like kind of graphic, but more or less, basically, a woman is claiming that like things started going well. They were like, you know, escalating on the first date kind of thing when, Yella Beezy apparently forced himself onto her and et cetera, et cetera. The woman apparently made a run for it and went to the hospital the next day. And that's how authorities sort of got more involved into it. Yella Beezy's team is responded saying everything is false, so it's going to go into that sort of song and dance. But the mugshot is rough, first of all. And it's not a good look to even be in that situation.
I fucking hate males. Men, dude.
Undefeated in being the worst.
Seriously.
So let's not talk about a man.
Let's talk about Rez, because Rez released Spiral. It is 11 songs, 35 minutes long. Definitely one of our more favorite electronic artists on the podcast, especially Dan really likes Rez. Introduced me to Rez. So also did hear him from Mousetrap Records as well, because Deadmau5 is one of my favorites. So anyways, going into the record. It's been a minute too, actually. Side note. Was the last Rez album? It's 2018, maybe?
Certain Kind of Magic. I want to say we did something on Mass Manipulation because that came out in 2017 did. Maybe it was a music recommendation of mine.
We definitely talked about Mass Manipulation because that's one of the first times I really listened to it was because of the podcast. Because I remember hearing her on Mousetrap Records and stuff, seeing Deadmau5 sign her. I was like, well, that's interesting. And because I think her and Feed Me were signed around the same time, and I talked about Feed Me as well. But Rez definitely has been putting out bangers pretty much ever since. Taking her time with certain stuff.
Yeah. One good thing as well that we in general, it sucks because we don't get to, for many reasons we've described, and maybe we'll just quickly go through them here. We don't get to review a lot of electronic albums on Audioface for some of the reasons we're about to state, although this isn't a conclusive list. Rarely do electronic DJs that are really popular release full out like records.
It's not often.
Oftentimes when they do, they're flaming hot garbage. Or it's like white DJs trying to speak Spanish. more or less, it's just like projects that in a given week when we have, you know, that or four or five other things to do, you know, we narrow it down and you get the episodes you get. And I think people are happy about that. But, and we've also talked about a little bit this year about more awareness being made about the discrepancy between men and women in the electronic music space as far as DJs go, and a lot of artists who are kind of fighting against that. And it's not that Reza necessarily fighting against, that's just that she is a great DJ that people really like, who has a unique sound that doesn't, like, some could say maybe sounds repetitive, but I would argue that she's been continually updating and changing her sound, especially as she works with other collaborators. And overall, I think that's what makes like Rez really interesting to review in the context of reviewing albums.
Yes, I agree. Especially because her records are pretty short. They're usually only a few songs long. This one's, again, only 35 minutes for 11 songs. And there are definitely different sounds. The first two tracks are definitely like pretty wubsy Rezzy, as I like to say, where it's like you get that solid bass wub and stuff in there, which I don't mind. I've grown to like it after time. For a while, it wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, but then more understanding of festivals and stuff that I went to and you could see it more perform live and to hear it, I could understand more and then gain appreciation for it. I mean, that's one thing I do really like about the podcast. To me, the track I really like is the third one of Levitate. I thought that was done very well because it's combining like almost like a Tycho-ish sound towards the middle, like a really chill electronic song, with the more craziness of a Rez track. So you're combining two different sounds. I haven't really heard that before, of trying to mess with the track like that, but obviously make it your own, so you're not just making it.
Yeah, I do appreciate that sort of variation, because you get Chemical Bond with Death Pack, who Rez has collaborated with recently, yep, and Let Me In, which... these are good progression songs, but they still sound like very kind of tried and true Rez tracks even. But yeah, Levitate is definitely sort of like that push to something a little bit newer. And then Sacrificial, which is just sort of super blown up. Has been, I think that's a really good track that like fits within sort of general EDM. You have like a female vocalist sing in the beginning and then a drop afterwards, but it's done in Rez's way, which continues to be fresh for the genre and then fresh for what Rez is doing, and just fits as like one of those like EDM pop sounding songs that just hits really nicely.
Yes. There's some stuff I like. There's some stuff that I thought was okay. Like, example, towards the middle, Sacrificial and Paper Walls, I thought were okay. They're kind of like your more standard EDM songs, naturally of it. After they get spun, which I like more, actually, because it's like the way she messes with electronics on there. And it sounds a little bit different because of the way she's making. I don't know exactly what electronics she's using per se. But the way she's almost blending them into like a web, and it's like feeling like you're getting pulled with the web in the middle of this track. It's my best way to explain it. I really like the way it does that effect.
I think that's like really, I think partially it's intentional because it's like Rez is a really smart DJ Spiral Spun Web Spider. It's all very much within her like motifs that she does. It's what she gets like a really kind of, you know, like a throwback to dubstep kind of track, but done with like a drum and bass Rezzy kind of flair to it. And I think that's really nice. That production effect where it's going through different, yeah, types of wubs, if you will, if I can even describe it that way. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, agreed. Got some more decent tracks towards the end. You have Taste of You with Rez and Dove Cameron, which I thought is pretty good. You have Vortex with Peekaboo, which I really like that one, especially towards the end, because it reminds me of some old Scream demos that I listened to a long time ago, but more of like your old school UK dubstep, which is how dubstep originated. We need to do a bonus episode of Sean's dubstep history, by the way. I would love to do that one day, because like, people don't understand what dubstep actually was like before it got mainstream in the US and got fucked by Screwdrivers and long-haired dudes named Sonny. But anyways, Vortex, I really liked Vortex. I love Time that she did a track with Eddie. Eddie's one that we have talked about a few times on the podcast, and it did not disappoint. Absolutely love this track. Fun. It slowly builds in the middle. It just hits, and I'm like, this is some solid, good traditional EDM, but it still has like enough of a twist on it to sound a little bit modern in the way it's done. Really like it. Did not disappoint.
Yeah, I think that track is classic Rez and classic Eddie. It's a good mix of both of them. I want to say they've done a collaboration one or two before, this is a good one. It's another one at the list.
This is the first thing I've heard with Eddie for a while now, though. He did like a single, a couple singles this year. Before that, it was just the one record. So I'm excited to hear if Eddie should hopefully be this year or.
Yeah, and Stress, the other Rez song with Eddie, was from 2019. So it has definitely been a minute. Overall, great track. Great record, though. You know, again, like if the EDM constraints notwithstanding, I think Rez continually is pushing her sound forward. And hopefully other EDM artists like can start to take some cues through this, because I think we may be long overdue for like a state of EDM episode, even like a deeper dive into that genre, let's say. Because
I would like to do that, where we could go into like our favorite stuff, like, because we can't talk about so much of it because it's all DJ mixes and other things of like underground events that we go to, or other things that you can hear and get different sounds and different mixing, which I would like to talk about as well.
Yeah, noted to do in the future. Arbitrary Scale, Stadium Names. I'm going to go ahead and give this Smoothie King.
You're going to give this a Smoothie King? All right. I'm going to give this to Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. Home of the Detroit Red Wings. Brand new stadium. Who do you get as your main sponsor? Little Caesars. Pizza, pizza. It's fucking
pizza,
awful.
Pizza.
The worst pizza, worst cardboard box thing you'll ever have in your entire life, ever.
Yeah. If you get melted cheese on the cardboard of the Little Caesars pizza, that cardboard's better than the pizza itself. Once you get the cheese on there.
Jeez, so bad. So bad. If you want to know why we always say that cancel culture doesn't exist, case in fucking point. So Morgan Wallen just announced a huge arena tour, because it don't exist, man. It just hypens up people. Like, that's what it does.
Morgan Wallen, the country music star who experienced maybe 2 or 3 weeks of being publicly chastised and then moved on to doing an apology tour, made some donations that we and others scrutinized, but seems to be like ultimately getting made to Black organizations, and then, you know, just going on with his musical career. Like we said, at least in the first half of the year, the top three artists streaming were Taylor Swift, Drake, and Morgan Wallen. So, of course, he's going to be doing arena shows at Madison Square Garden, at the Staples Center, not the Crypto.com arena. And yeah, you just know other arenas across the country. The Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, like it's people who get news articles written after them are not really the ones getting canceled. So, yeah, just get a grip on this. Don't let these cancel culture arguments, and why are we hammering this at home? It's worth saying. Don't let these cancel culture arguments like win you over, because if you actually believe that these celebrities are facing, you know, the end of their lives because of criticism for things that they did in their lives, then you're going to start letting those celebrities off for bad behavior, A. And B, you're also going to start to give in to nefarious forces in politics right now who want you to believe that there is a mob coming after regular people, but they always use extremely like famous niche comedians and celebrities who have major platforms and followings to illustrate these examples. They never use like, oh, this is a regular person who actually got canceled and their like lives got ruined, because cancel culture does not exist. Cancel culture does not exist. Cancel culture does not exist. However, justice does exist sometimes. And we talked about this story because of its just purely wild nature. So never one forget. Of R. Kelly's associates, it was accused
Michael
of...
Michael Williams.
Yeah, was accused of like, because a number of R. Kelly's associates, and it wasn't just like him doing these things. He had people who were like enforcers, essentially, making sure that he was able to do these things and intimidating people who put his operation at risk. And so Michael Williams, one of R. Kelly's associates, has been sentenced to 96 months in El Federal Clink for using gasoline to light an SUV on fire.
Man. Hope you like to spend the next, what, 6 years in jail, 7 years in jail? Have fun, mate.
Yeah, Williams doused an SUV with gasoline outside of a Florida home where one of R. Kelly's victims had been staying. It belonged to the woman's father, and along with lighting it ablaze, Williams wrote a threatening message that said, and I quote, "It might be wise for you to protect your daughter from heartache she's going to endure through this and after. She had to live with every stain you guys create publicly."
Absurd, man. Absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sorry, that last part. She had to live with every stain you guys create publicly was kind of like the dad's response to everything that was going on. But yeah, that original, it might be right for you to protect your daughter from the heartache. Like, that was a threat in addition to your hoopty being lit on fire.
Your hoopty being on fire.
So, like.
Never forget hoopty.
Yeah. It's a mess. At least justice is being served there. And yes, we always like to end our face on a fun note. Sean, take the wheel.
Yeah. So Jonathan Guy Greenwood, also known as Jesus of music of our lifetime, guitarist of Radiohead. He is, well, multi-instrumentalist of Radiohead. I shouldn't just call him a guitarist at this point. But he has...
Sean, you're getting real good at fluffing.
Right. He released the... hey, I gave you 100 gecs, all right? And I gave you Damon last week, so I guess I'm Johnny, damn it.
Not for anyways. The podcast. Members only. Members only.
Paywalls, baby. But anyways, he shared the Power of the Dog soundtrack. So he actually has two soundtracks of films that were released this month. Spencer, he did the soundtrack for that, the Diana, Princess Diana biopic. That was released earlier this month. And then The Power of the Dog, which is a kind of a Western thriller type of film that was released, I believe, this week as well. Both of those he did the soundtracks for. So I would actually like to talk about them, but I need to see both films. I want to see them first and then kind of go into them. But he has released those soundtracks, so you can go and stream them on Spotify and all that jazz, as all his other ones are. For the most part. So yeah, that's been the podcast.
Johnny Greenwood's been on a pretty good like soundtrack a year and, kind of thing when he's
and another thing, he did Paul Thomas Anderson's new film. I think it's called Pizza something. I forget. That's supposed to be out this year too, actually. So there's three films that he scored that'll be out within like a month of each other, which is crazy.
And he's working on this. He worked on The Smile too, that other project with.
That's finished too. The Smile's been finished. They're just, I think, Tom and Johnny, or sorry, Tom and Nigel are just producing it and I'm going to release it at some point. So dude,
final bits. Yeah, probably. It's going to be a lit 2022. Music wise, it seems 2021, which is relentless music wise.
God damn, that live show, The Smile, was really good, and I can't wait for the whole album to be released. It's going to be beautiful one day. Well, you this know, we need to hold Tom and just be like, hey, we just heard all the music you're sitting on for like 25 years. Release the plague. Do it. Give us your music.
It's like when SpongeBob was holding Mr. Krabs up, listen, you crustaceous cheapskate, and trying to shake everything out of him. It's like Tom York.
And then all boom, the coin. And then his first coin pops out. It's just like a laptop for a MacBook from like a 1999. That's just like 3 years worth of 3 years of music in there.
This has been Audio Face.
Yes. This has been a podcast about morals and music culture and stuff that mostly matters. Thank you for listening to us. You can follow us at Audio Face Pod on all socials if you want more of our fine faces and work. Also, send us stuff. Like, we love listening to you guys. If you got single suggestion or any suggestions for anything you guys want to listen to, you can email audioface@syndicate23.co. To have us review your stuff, even if it's your gubs or someone else's gubs you want us to do. You can follow me at SW Suarez if I trust you, if I super trust you. And you can follow Dan, whether you trust you or not, at Dan from the web on Twitter and Dan from the internet on Instagram. This has been Audio Face, also youtube.com/audiofacepod for all our clips. Some of them are really good and comment section is hilarious. So thank you very much. See you all next week. It's the fucking Staples Center, not the crypto.com arena, god damn it.
Never.